It's been 23 hours, nearly a day, since the power went out across parts of the Northeast, the Midwest, and Canada. By all accounts, the night was peaceful, even festive. And while the good cheer and camaraderie of neighbors seems to be holding up, some people still long for a shower and a hot cup of coffee, a cool breeze, or a flight home.
I was calling my mother on my cell phone, and she was asking me what was being... She had no idea. They had no radio, they had no lights, they had no air conditioning, they had nothing. And she had no idea what was going on.
Well, the kids, the young kids that are Kelly Clarkson fans were... That was their biggest concern. You know, we can't not have the concert because they really were looking forward to the concert. But it went on a little bit longer than she had agreed to, and she was just very gracious.
Police have appealed to people to stay indoors and turn their appliances off, so when the power does come on, it doesn't cause a problem. But if you look at the streets, while there are a lot of cars that aren't moving anywhere, people are still trying to go about their daily lives as best as they can. Mainly they're just trying to get home and then figure out what went wrong.
We have a lot of roses and lilies in stock, and they're all opening, blowing open faster than they normally would. It's with refrigeration that helps keep them fresher longer. Obviously, we don't have any customers, so I'm just concerned that we're going to lose a lot of money this weekend.
It's affected our show in the following way. When the power went out, we usually tape at 5:30. Entire studio audience, which was waiting downstairs, desperate to see Conan O'Brien, had to be evacuated. So we have no audience this evening. If we can get a shot of that. That's kind of what it looked like the first year I was on the air.
We kind of made it an adventure. We have flashlights, and we kind of set up a tent with sheets, and we put the flashlights in there, and we just kind of sang some songs. And I mean, again, this was 2:00 in the morning, so I was pretty delirious because I had been at work all day.
By bedtime tonight, I'm hoping that we'll have power everywhere, water everywhere.
Now, power will be out through the weekend is what Detroit Edison is telling us. They're telling us that it will take through till Sunday to restore power to all the areas, so this is not over.
The second-to-last voice you heard there was Jane Campbell, the mayor of Cleveland, Ohio. The last was of Bill Poorman of Michigan Public Radio. Cleveland, Ohio was not only without electricity last night, but the water was out as well. Karen Schaefer is a reporter for WCPN in Cleveland, Ohio. She joins us now from there, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks, Neil.
Do most people have their water back?
Well, most people do have their water back, although not all neighborhoods and suburbs have water yet. Mayor Jane Campbell says it could be evening before service is restored. And I might point out that at the height of the outage, we had more than a million people here who had no water.
Now, this lack of water was due to lack of electricity to the pumps that move the water around, right?
Exactly. Drinking water here in Cleveland is drawn from Lake Erie. So, of course, it has to be then pumped throughout the city. Without power, the pumping stations couldn't operate, and the city just didn't have any backup generators big enough to drive the pumps.
Now, what kind of problems did that cause other than not being able to drink the water?
Well, obviously, it caused a lot of problems with businesses. We had a lot of businesses that simply couldn't open. For example, a major steel industry here, a major steel mill, couldn't do any of its painting and had to shut down even after electricity came back because it still didn't have water. But most people seem to cope pretty well with it, and there was certainly a run on bottled water last night.
What about the fire department? Obviously, they need water, too. Were there any emergencies?
There were 3 fires overnight, all of them handled and safely put out. The water came in those big water-carrying trucks called buffaloes from all over the state and arrived during the night and were available for use.
And any other consequences from the blackout?
Well, I think probably one biggest consequence has been that today we're seeing more blackouts. First Energy has been, that's our major service provider here in northern Ohio, has announced that it's going to start rolling blackouts. Those have been affecting about 125,000 customers at a time in Cleveland and surrounding counties. It's to help prevent that grid from crashing again as it did yesterday.
Well, Karen Schaefer, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And nice to hear that most people have their water back there.
Yes.
Karen Schaefer is a reporter for member station WCPN in Cleveland, Ohio. She joined us from her office there in Cleveland. We're going to take a short break now and come back with more about the effects of the blackout, when it might be resolved. Some places, maybe not till the end of the weekend, maybe not until Monday. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, or you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're continuing our conversation about the blackout that struck most of the Northeast and parts of the Midwest, also, of course, parts of Canada as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Just before the break, we were talking about the effect on water in Cleveland. Fortunately, most people there have their water back, but we wanted to continue this conversation. Tom Curtis joins us now. He's Deputy Executive Director of American Water Works Association. He's with us from his office here in Washington, and good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
What happens to an area's water system during a blackout? But, well, I guess there are different kinds of water systems.
Well, there are different kinds of water systems, but virtually all of them are heavily dependent on power. You need electric pumps typically to move water from a source, like a lake or a river, into a treatment plant, through the treatment plant, and then out of the treatment plant up into an elevated storage container of some sort, a water tower, if you will. From that water tower, water would typically flow by gravity into the home. But what happened in Cleveland is that the pumps that are used to get water into the water treatment plant out of Lake Erie shut down because the power grid failed.
New York City is obviously an exception to that. That system is pretty well gravity-fed.
There's a much more assistance from gravity in New York than in Cleveland. Obviously, the failure of the electricity grid is an extraordinary event. Doesn't happen very often, thankfully, and it's probably outside the bounds of the worst-case scenarios that most water utilities typically plan for.
There's a few utilities more basic than water. Are water systems, do they have backup generators, that sort of thing?
Yes, virtually every water system will have some redundancy, some backup generators or redundant connections to multiple power substations, multiple power plants that can serve the water system so that if, say, a substation goes down or a power plant goes offline, the water system can continue operating. But again, if the entire electricity grid fails, that's an extraordinary occurrence that in at least in some cases, can overwhelm the ability of the backup system.
In Cleveland, as we've heard, the city has issued an advisory to residents to boil their tap water for 24 hours before they drink it. Why do they need to do that?
Well, it's a safety precaution. It may not be necessary, but it's a very wise thing to do as a safety precaution. When water is in pipes underground, it's under pressure. And if there might happen to be a crack or a pinhole leak in the pipe, clean treated water would flow out of the pipe under pressure into the ground. When that pipe gets empty or water pressure in the pipe falls below a certain level, it's theoretically possible for contaminated groundwater to actually seep into the pipe. And then you might get a supply at your home, a tap that is in fact contaminated by something that intruded into the pipe. To prevent against that, the utilities are advising their customers to boil the water in some cases.
Let's get a call, and Victoria joins us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, we have to boil our water here.
How come? Well, we just found out how come.
Yeah, really.
Is it a plot by the gas company, you figure?
I'm sorry?
Is it a plot by the gas company to get people boiling a lot of water? I'm just
yeah,
joking.
Really. I'm sure with the gas, you know, with the utility costs. Sure. I don't know. I fortunately keep water stashed. I recycle my containers, juice containers, and put water in them and put them underneath the sink and keep water normally. So
how often do you replace it?
I rotate it about maybe every 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're prepared.
Yeah, I have to be. I mean, plus another thing I did last night was filled up my bathtub with water.
Well, that's something that seems to be a reasonable plan. Tom Curtis, what about that? If you're in, you know, if you're all of us should, like Victoria, anticipate crises. Not all of us do, but if we have time, should we fill up our bathtubs?
I think that's a good idea. You also would have fresh water in your hot water tank. If you shut off the intake from the street, you've got a large volume of water in the hot water tank. The Red Cross advises people as a standard kind of safety precaution to store several days' worth of water in their home and to be sure to change that supply of water every 3 to 6 months.
So Victoria's right to do that.
Yes, I think so.
Well, Victoria, you're coming across very well here. You're scoring on all the points.
Yeah, I try. I don't know. You know, I was out in D.C. in 9/11, and, you know, I just, you know, after being out there during that situation, I, you know, try to be prepared with the flashlight and having a radio and candles and water and, you know, just being prepared.
Congratulations, Victoria. We appreciate the phone call.
Hey, and thanks for doing this show because it does make a difference.
Thank you.
For all the people who still don't have electricity, hey, just hang in there, you know?
Okay, Victoria, thanks very much.
Yeah, peace and blessings, by the way.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
And Tom Curtis, we appreciate your time today.
My pleasure, Neil.
Tom Curtis is Deputy Executive Director of the American Water Works Association, and he was speaking with us from their offices here in Washington, D.C. Let's get another caller, and Dave is on the line with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
Oh, not too bad, but what about you?
It's been kind of rough for me because I'm house-sitting for my parents. They're on vacation the last 2 weeks, and everything's been fine up till now. The thing is, like, I brought over my computer so I could work on stuff, brought over the PlayStation 2, everything like that. Yeah, all I've had to do for the last 48 hours is read by candlelight and play cards. And while the reading is good and, you know, it's fundamental, as they say, and everything, it's just driving me nuts. And what kills me is they have power up in Lansing. So if I was up there where my apartment is, I could actually do things. And then when I offered to my folks to clean out the fridge, I talked to them over the phone, which obviously, and thank goodness I still have a phone, like, no, don't touch anything. And it's like, I'm sorry you want a smelly house to come home to, but I'm doing what I can here, and I need something to do.
Well, your situation sounds like that old Statler Brothers song about playing solitaire with a deck of 51.
Yeah, basically. Thankfully, I'm playing with a full deck for once in my life, so that's a good thing.
But you must be hot.
I am. Fortunately, Ann Arbor's separate from the Detroit water system, and we've got plenty of water, and we don't need to boil anything. I'm very blessed in that regard.
Mm-hmm. So next time your parents go away and they ask you to house sit?
Only if they buy a generator.
Smart kid, Dave.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's get another caller, and Karen is on the line from Waterloo, Iowa.
Well, actually, I'm on my way home to Guttenberg, Iowa.
Aha! So you're driving?
I'm driving, yes, I am.
Okay, and what's your experience been?
Well, I don't have any experience. I just have a comment to make. I love New York City, and I love going there, but in Guttenberg at night, when I look up at the sky, I can see it because we don't have a million people living there, just 2,000.
Mm-hmm. So not a lot of lights on at any time.
That's right. And we've been enjoying Mars in the southeast sky. And so I guess if I was in New York City and I didn't have any power on, I might look up at the stars tonight.
Well, it's funny. We got an email on that exact point from Beth, who writes, I'm writing from the shore of Lake Erie to say that though this power outage has called all sorts and degrees of hardship, there was one very bright star literally in all of this, the planet Mars. The view was spectacular, unencumbered by the constant haze of lights usually crowding the northeastern night skies. The timing was nearly perfect for viewing it at such a close distance. I felt very lucky to be able to enjoy such a beautiful sight without fancy equipment in my own backyard.
He's absolutely right. It is beautiful. And I hope the people get some compensation for their hardships right now.
Well, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Are you going to be out looking at the stars tonight?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. It's, you know, it's kind of that thing that you can do because, you know, it happened the last time, 50, 60,000 years ago. So
that's
we're enjoying it while we can.
That wasn't the last power outage, the last time Mars was this close.
Right. That's correct. That's correct.
Well,
thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Karen.
All right. Bye now.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As we've just been talking about, it was a great night for urban stargazing last night. Meteorologist Joe Rao, who writes the Skywatch column for the Sunday New York Times, joins us now from his home in Putnam Valley, New York. And good of you to be with us here on Talk of the Nation.
Neil, always a pleasure.
Last night you were down in Levittown on Long Island. Not a place you'd normally go for stargazing.
No, actually, Levittown was where I used to live. I moved up here to the relatively rural confines of Putnam Valley to actually see the stars, because I couldn't see them all that well anymore from Levittown, which is in Nassau County, Long Island, a stone's throw to the east of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in Levittown, my wife and my two kids and I. We were visiting some friends when the power went out, old neighbors of ours, and we were there until late last night. And believe it or not, even though I was in Levittown for 15 years and never saw it, last night, for a short while before the moon came over the horizon, I was actually able to see a portion of the Milky Way from my old haunts out in Nassau County.
And that's probably something you haven't seen there since you were a little kid.
Well, I wasn't in Levittown when I was a little kid, but I can tell you that not too far away from Levittown at Jones Beach, back in the 1960s and 70s, they used to have regular star parties at West End Beach Number 2. Folks used to go down there, telescopes were set up, and from that part of the greater New York area, on a good clear night, you could see quite a bit, including the Milky Way. But over the last, 15 to 20 years, with the rapid increase of light pollution, that is not the case anymore. And I moved away from Levittown primarily because from where I used to live, I could only see six of the seven stars in the Big Dipper.
Levittown, almost synonymous with suburbia in post-World War II America. I wonder, were other neighbors in Levittown, or former neighbors of yours, I guess, but neighbors of your friends, were they crowding out to see this unusual display of lights in the sky?
It was kind of like a block party without lights. Our friends and neighbors from around the area, from around the local area, were just outside, pretty much sitting on their porch, looking around, looking up, talking with each other. The kids, I think, got more of a kick just running around with flashlights and playing a game, which my two kids told me later on was improvised, called Manhunt. So, I mean, I tried to get them interested, and a few of them were interested, gave a little impromptu sky interpretation session, showed a few constellations. We waited until Mars came over the horizon, pointed that out, but generally speaking, a lot of people just sitting around cursing the darkness.
Now, Mars is a spectacular sight right now, as our last caller and emailer both said.
It is something that you cannot miss. It's now currently ranking as the fourth brightest object in the sky next to the Sun, Moon, and planet Venus. You can't miss it. If you go outside any night in the coming days and weeks and look toward the southeast portion of the sky about 10 or 11 o'clock, you'll see this brilliant, very, very brilliant star-like object shining with a steady glow. We call it the red planet. In fact, last night it looked mercurochrome red to me, but that was only because I was looking at it through a layer of haze and schmutz near the horizon. But when you get it high up above the horizon, it looks like a topaz or yellowish-orange color, and it is very, very bright, very distinct. And as that lady who just called a few moments ago mentioned, in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, on August the 27th, it'll be closer to the Earth than it has been in nearly 60,000 years.
Schmutz, that's the scientific word for humidity?
No, it's the scientific word for filthy air, which the greater New York area, unfortunately, has quite a bit of.
Let's get a caller on the line. Christina's with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hi.
Hi.
I was out last night with the camera photographing stars, and was interested in it particularly because there was a lot less light pollution last night.
So a great opportunity for you.
Yes. And
have you had a chance to, do you think you got any great shots?
Well, I got was able to bring up some of the less visible stars by repeating exposures, but my camera doesn't allow me to hold the lens open for a very long exposure, so I had to do multiple exposures to get anything.
Is it a digital camera?
Yes.
So you've had a chance to look at what you shot last night.
Mm-hmm.
How'd they turn out?
They were reasonably good. I had it set on what's called ASA 1600, but it's the digital equivalent, and when you start doing multiple shots, the the noise starts really becoming a big problem too. So,
well, Christina, thanks very much.
Thanks.
And I hope you get good luck taking shots. Appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Jo Rayo, we just have a couple of seconds left, but she certainly took advantage of the opportunity.
Well, one of the things I was cursing last night was the fact that we were so close to full moon. The moon came up just after 9:30 local time last evening, and once it came over the horizon, it was like a 2,000-watt spotlight in the sky. I might point out that last time New York had a major power outage in July of 1977, there wasn't any moon. And as a result of that, I had the time of my life watching the sky, a country-type sky.
Joe Rayo, thanks very much. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Noyce Foundation, dedicated to improving math and science instruction from kindergarten through grade 12, and supporting NPR Science Friday, sciencefriday.com. From the National Science Foundation, America's investment in the future. From the Gruber Family Foundation, for support of NPR's international coverage, and from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Listening is great, but what Americans really love to do is talk. And thanks to Talk of the Nation, you can do both. I'm Neil Conan. Join me for insightful conversations with the day's newsmakers, the sharpest analysts, and your friends, your neighbors, your family, and your coworkers. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.